Voodoo magic. Fucking voodoo magic, man! I'm Liam, this is Rob, he's Dave, and this week on the Hey Guys podcast, we take a long overdue look back at 1990's Predator 2, a movie that, while far from recapturing the unparalleled magic of the original, did manage to be at least okay. Still, for all its inherent okayness, it remains an oddly iconic movie thanks to a collection of memorable set pieces, some fantastic line deliveries, and the introduction of the crossover movie universe. So, Rob, Dave, are you both on the okay bandwagon, or do you have a more positive opinion on what is probably the fourth best Predator movie?
Before we get into that, before we started recording, I showed Dave my notes, and literally my top note, Liam's quote, Voodoo Magic Man.
Oh, it has to be. It's the best.
He didn't
quote.
Mention it in an Indian accent. No.
In Indian. Voodoo magic. Fucking voodoo magic, man.
I like this film. I have always liked this film. I've always thought it was good. I wouldn't put it on the okay list. I don't. If you look at it, like I prefer it over Predators.
That's for me. That's the conversation. Like, and let's be clear, because that sounded pretty negative. But what, and I think we mentioned on the previous, on the Predator podcast, one of our first ones, is that the sequels, they don't have the highs of Aliens. You know, like Aliens is one of the greatest sequels of all time. But what it doesn't have is the lull, and the, you know, there's nothing as bad as the worst Aliens films. Most of the Predator sequels are all just pretty decent. And this kind of, like, you know, if I say this is the fourth best Predator movie and you say it's the second, yeah, I could go for that. You could convince me. I don't think it's like much worse than I probably prefer Predators, and I definitely prefer Prey, but not by like a ton. Prey is like a much better made movie, but this isn't a brilliantly made film, but it's fun as fuck.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's so funny as well. I mean, I love him as much as I do. To see Danny Glover try and be an action star, not the action sidekick. Like Lethal Weapon, it's an action film, but he doesn't do much of the action.
But he's an old man.
Yeah.
He was portraying the old man. Yeah.
Even in this, do you know how old he was when he made this film, when he shot it? He was a year older than me, man. He was 43. We're basically the same fucking age. He looks old as shit. Like, I'll give him this, right? He's in good shape and he's got screen presence. His big issue is he's so one note. I was trying to decide, right? Because this is set in the distant future, 1997.
Yeah.
So I was trying to decide if this was an alternative universe where Mike was basically, Murtaugh just changed his name to Mike after he had like a big fallout with his wife. He doesn't talk to his kids anymore. His daughter's fucking Riggs. He moves to LA. Everything falls to pieces. So this is just Murtaugh just changed his name to Mike. I was like, do you need to change a single thing about this movie? I'm like, no, just like Murtaugh, he says asshole a lot. He's just playing the same dude, just slightly angrier. Although, like I said, I do like him in this film, albeit like he's no Arnie.
No, he's not an action star. I mean, when he did the roll and shoot on the rooftop, so when he was shooting the Predator at the end, my God, that looked clunky. It's like when you're trying to get up from playing with the kid on the floor. Now I'm 41 years of age and everything breaks as I'm trying to stand up. That's how I felt like he was when he was doing the roll and shoot.
Every time he hid behind something, you just know he's making dad noises when he got up.
Oh, 100%. The thing is, right, the first impressions with Danny Glover aren't great. So you get the tweed pants. That's a bad start. Like, you shouldn't be giving your action star tweed fucking pants. That opening sequence with El Scorpio, he does a really dumb thing when he drives at El Scorpio, but then leans out the car into a position which is easily shootable. Like, if any more of a target, but he acts like he's being smart. He shouts, he assholes and stuff. But I like, right from the start, I don't think he gets off on the, you know, the right footing with basically everyone. But above all else, and it's one of the issues with the film, is that the wardrobe department have just done him no favors. Like, can you be too sweaty? The answer for this film is yes.
He rivals Bill Duke, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Sweatiest man on camera.
I felt so grimy watching it.
All of the clothes, like you said, it's typical 90s fashion, isn't it? So everything's oversized, nothing fits properly. But it's all beige and brown. He just looks dirty all the time. I mean, they all just look filthy. It looks like that scene.
Yeah, like even Bill
Sting.
So what came first, though, right? What came first? them deciding there was a heat wave and they add the audio thing at the end about the biggest heat wave, or after filming, they're going, fucking hell, Danny Glover sweats a lot. Let's just say they're in the middle of a heat wave and we're done.
Yeah.
Like, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
Because he's up there. Like, when I think of, like, sweaty actors, I think of, like, The Rock, I think of Connery, and I think of Harrison Ford. But they've got a way of, The Rock just looks like he's glistening all the time. It's a different kind of sweat. And Harrison Ford looks sweaty, but he doesn't look gross. And maybe it's something to do, I think it's the combination of the film. And fair play, the film is successful at creating this kind of, like you said, this environment. That, like, the fact that you feel like you're there, like you can almost smell the environment. But because of the clothing, and the clothing all looks big, baggy, and thick, and tweed, and cotton, it just looks fucking grim. Like, Bill Paxton is wearing a suit. He's not just sweating through his shirt. He's sweating through the suit. I'm like, do we need to see that? There's a scene in the middle of the night with fucking Danny Glover. He's still sweating his tits off as soon as he shows up. I was like, Jesus Christ, man. Does the sun never go down this motherfucker?
I was sweating watching this. It was so warm. I just felt so warm. You mentioned the beginning of the film. I told Dave before we started recording, I want to talk like 45 minutes about the beginning of the film. I won't, but I want to. My first note was, who are the Colombians shooting at? Because they're all aiming up.
Please.
When they're shooting, they're all doing it. Al Scorpion comes out, and he's aiming up. The only time he shoots properly is when he's got the one-shot grenade launcher. And what I loved then, when they went into the building, I love the communal bag of cocaine, like the communal briefcase of cocaine. Everyone have a sniff, you'll be fine. Let's get then the one-shot grenade launchers. We got a case of them. And then El Scorpio, I keep calling him El Scorpio, he might have just been the Scorpio.
But it is, no, it's El Scorpio. That's what he's referencing.
Was it? Okay. So he's then got his own cocaine in a weird, like, delivery system, that Buddha thing that he, it was fucking insane. And while I'm going on a diatribe, when he fell off the building, when the Predator scared him, and I love the fact the Predator's invisible, but everybody can see him. But when he fell off the building, what was that picnic table made of?
Whoever makes those tables deserves a knighthood or something.
They should make the police's armor because that good guy fell, what, like 20 stories or whatever it was, and that picnic table, I think the plates still hadn't moved.
Well, you make a good point, though, about the camouflage, because Gary Busey, like, at one point says, or it's not Gary Busey, I think it's, which Baldwin brother is it?
Adam. And he's not a Baldwin, Adam, brother.
It's what you say, sorry, it's not a Baldwin.
He's
called
Adam,
Baldwin.
Yeah, his name's Adam Baldwin. But
but he's not a Baldwin brother. Yeah, yeah. He's from Serenity and stuff, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, he says, one of them says basically, oh, it's the perfect camouflage. If this movie proves one thing, is that the camouflage is far from the perfect camouflage. And I would go as far as saying that.
Is that just for us to know he's there? Are they just getting a sense there's something around?
Oh, no.
Or are they seeing that weird sort of lined?
The way El Scorpio stared at him and got scared, he saw that thing move. And I know what, like, it's saying, like, if you stand still, maybe you won't see it, but he was moving at the time, so it was shimmering. But they, like, in Predator 1, they made it sound like he was the perfect killer. You can't see him in the jungle, he's hunting you, it's fucking great. In this one, they're going, well, he's all right. Like, you know, he's still killing people, but, I mean, if this guy fucking takes one step, everyone can see him, just nobody can seem to kill him. It just,
well, that's one of the big issues with this film, is that this Predator is he's miles, like the first one, like you said, it's such a big deal for them just to see the Predator. In this film, like, the Predator should have been killed like four times. He's a bit of a dope, he's a bit of a show off. Like, there's the scene in the meat locker where Danny Glover has him dead to right. He shoots him a bunch of times with a shotgun, and it's like, dude, finish the job, unload the rest of the fucking clip. Doesn't do it. Predator gets off, just brushes off all those like point blank shotgun shells somehow. On the roof, Danny Glover has a sequence, which is right after that, where he gets the spear. The Predator's turned his back to him. He has the complete drop on him.
With it, rather,
I've got
than
a spear.
Him.
Oh, what am I going to do? I should probably rugby tackle him. I'm like, you dopey cunt. It's ridiculous. And even when he gets him, like when he's about to blow him up. So he knocks him off the roof and you end up in that really clumsy Batman 89 style finale where the Predator's hanging on to Danny Glover's arms. And he tries to blow him up by doing his little arm thing.
Yeah.
When he cuts off the Predator's arm, he does like a fucking cartoon bug-eyed thing. Like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. I'm like, dude, this Predator's kind of shit. And in the
That's one of my biggest bugbears about this
Danny
film.
Glover.
When he cuts his arm off, Why does the bomb stop?
Yeah, because he cut through the bomb, I think.
I mean, that's bullshit.
Yeah, and the right countdown. No, I don't know.
He never got to the countdown, though.
But
no, I think it was because he didn't finish the countdown. Like, in the first one, he had to go through the whole thing, and then once he finished the thing, that's when you got the little symbols going, boop, boop,
the symbols were going.
He never got to that bit.
Yeah, it was. He's already dead. Because he turns around to him and says, shit happened.
Yeah.
And then
I think Liam's saying is the countdown didn't finish, so he interrupted the countdown. That's why it didn't go off.
Oh, so the bomb knew that the guy's arm had been chopped off.
I'm trying to find an excuse for another dumb thing that happens in this film. As I mentioned at the start, a lot of really dumb things happen in this film.
You're on my biggest bugbear, right? You said your biggest. By the way, mine is as well. When he lands in the bathroom and then he takes the tile off the wall, which I'm guessing has asbestos in, that's why he's able to seal his armor.
Sure.
But it looks like he's in a communal bathroom or a communal toilet. It looks like you'd go in a stadium. But then the woman walks in and goes, there's somebody in our bathroom. Like, did you make that, like, literally look like a fucking stadium? It was a weird bathroom.
Well, it was supposed to be that, like, the whole, like, first question with that scene is, how deaf is Herb and his wife? Like, he breaks through the wall, there's all the hubbub, and then she's like, Herb, I think someone's in the bathroom. Yeah, no fucking shit, someone's in the bathroom. Like, not only is he crashed through the wall, he's punching holes in the wall to make, in fairness, that's one of the few things this movie does better than the first one. The whole actor heals himself in the opening film. But there's something awesome about the way he punches the wall and uses, like, I don't know what you call it, cement, whatever it is, to make that paste. I always thought that looked really cool. And I think, like, I didn't even notice the fact that the bathroom looked like a stadium bathroom. I was just caught up in the fact that Herb and his wife are just the two most deaf people in the world. Although she did get a great line afterwards when Murtaugh, I literally called him Murtaugh by accident. Mike runs in behind him and goes, don't worry, I'm a cop. She's like, I don't think he gives a shit. I'm like, yeah, I don't think he does. He just run right through the fucking wall.
The reason he's able to heal himself is he's got all the time in the world. He knows Mike is across there. Like, he can literally see him while he's healing himself, but there's nothing fucking Danny Glover can do. Like, he's climbing down, and then it takes him about 15 minutes to climb over that pipe to get
there. Well,
of course, it's because, just in case it wasn't clear, like, when they set it up at the opening sequence, I'm like, oh, I wonder if him being scared of heights is going to play a part in this movie. Jesus Christ, yeah, we fucking get it. And bringing it back to first impressions, because we mentioned the fact that, are we all kind of on the page that, like, for all his faults, he does a decent film.
He's a decent lead. Like, he's okay. Decent lead, yeah.
He's no Arnie, but he's fine.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah, no, but the question is, he's
not an action hero, is he?
No.
No. But that is the thing, though. Like, would this movie be made? Would it be better immediately? And these are the two big names that jumped out in terms of, like, the other folk who were up to star in this film before Danny Glover eventually got the role. And the two that jumped out were Patrick Swayze, which makes it a very different movie, but I think potentially works, or Steven Seagal, which, again, he was literally down to be in this film, but he made so many kind of, like, he was like, oh, the cop has to be like a martial arts specialist and all this other nonsense because, of course, it's Steven Seagal in the end. Like, fuck this guy. We're just going to bring in Murtaugh. But as much as I think the Swayze version of this movie might be better, the version I want to see is 100% the Steven Seagal version of Predator 2.
Oh, so Steven Seagal would have to have a fist fight with him and kill him.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, but Patrick Swayze is just going to turn around to somebody and say, nobody puts Predator in the corner.
Roadhouse.
Yeah, but you can just imagine him talking shit to the Predator. I don't know, man. I just love the Seagal version. But I think ultimately the problem with this film is that despite having some great supporting actors with Bill Paxton and stuff, and obviously Gary Busey, is that they don't do enough to establish the rest of the cast. So fundamentally, the film always feels like it's the Predator versus Danny Glover. Whereas I know, obviously, Schwarzenegger was the star of the first film. But the reason it worked and the reason the best horror slasher films, you know, it's sci-fi, but fundamentally it's a horror slasher film. Just the best ones work because they have a really memorable collection of cast members who get killed off one at a time. And the thing is, in this, none of the kills, you just don't give a shit. Like, even when, like, Bill Paxton, we all love Bill Paxton, when he gets killed, I just don't give a fuck. They try and make a big deal out of Danny. I couldn't give two fucking hoots about Danny and his magic fucking necklace. So the whole film,
I mean, you're on about shoving the pipe thing down your throat. How many times did he hug that, like pull that necklace off his neck, going, keep an eye on this? Yeah, keep an eye on this because it's going to come back later.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for fuck.
Yeah, it was up there with, like, I'm scared of heights. I also own a necklace. It's like, yeah. Yeah, we fucking get it, guys. We fucking get it. The other option would have been, and I think this, again, bringing it back to Steven Seagal, is that what they should have done is go like the full executive decision route. Like they should have got some, or Scream is another one, where they should have got some really big names, killed off one of them in the opening section, and then you're saying like, I don't know who the fucking lead is, and you don't know who's going to last till the end.
El Scorpio.
Oh, of course, El Scorpio. Oh, I like El Scorpio. He makes a better first impression than Danny Glover.
What were you going to say?
Like you said about Bill Paxton when he died. It was a weird scene, man. When they're on the train, yeah. You know, you can't see a lot and everything. And I know that he's technically invisible and everything. He emptied two clips into him. When did he suddenly become bulletproof as well?
100%.
Yeah. Walking straight at him and, you know, nothing. Like, yes, great.
But he needs to sort his arm out.
It's a great point. Like the Predator was never bulletproof. Like the whole point was that he was agile, could get away from it. Like even that, you know, you think of the first film where they're all shooting at the jungle. The point is he does get clipped, but he gets away. He doesn't just stand there. And you see the view, point of view from the Predator as he's pointing the gun right at him, just unloading. It's like the Predator's not bulletproof. And I like that. The train sequence is maybe the most iconic sequence in the film. And I do like it. But that bit is just another part of the film, which is just like, oh, we just want to be iconic rather than this film making any fucking sense.
Was he after the police? Was he after the people on there? Were the police just happened to be the place? There's a lot of these sort of...
Why was he in the train?
Yeah, there's lots of...
Why does I know it's kind of like slightly dystopian 1997, but why does every single person on that train have a gun? It was like a fucking cartoon sketch where they pull a gun, then they pull a gun, then they pull a bill of gun. I was like, there's like 72 people with guns on this train. It's ridiculous.
It's the thing, isn't it? It instantly made me think of like Demolition Man. What was going on in LA in the mid-90s? Because it's like a fucking war zone.
Everyone's
fuck knows. And the thing is, I do think this movie... Like, I think it had some real potential, and it does hint at, like, interesting things. Like, there's the hardcore news reports. And at one point, I was like, oh, you know, maybe they were going for, like, a RoboCop cross with Predator vibe, going for, like, a Verhoeven satirical take on it. But it's really clumsy. It never really lands. And then I was trying to think of, like, why doesn't this sequel work as well as, say, as an Aliens? And I think the reason is it invites, unflattering comparisons with the original because it's too similar. Yes, it's in the city, but structurally it's just super similar. And that was what was brilliant about, and I know I bum James Cameron and stuff like that, but James Cameron was smart enough with Aliens to know that you know what the alien is like. So the suspense is gone. I need to do something completely different. And he went for the war thing. He went for loads of aliens. And that made sense. And the reason I think, say, Prey is the most successful of the sequels is because it actually did the complete opposite, that it totally paid it back, that it stripped the movie of all its constituent parts and just went down to the fundamental concept of the prey and the prey. And
I appreciate that with Prey, but there's still not much you can do with somebody who is called the Predator. He has to hunt. So the storyline is going to be the same thing throughout the film. He has to hunt. You have to have somebody who realizes, oh, he's invisible. Oh, if he bleeds, we can kill it. But apparently he's bulletproof in this one, but he's not his own weapon proof, I guess, is because he gets killed with his own weapons. That's the only way he dies. It's just, I see what you're saying, but it can't, it a million miles away.
The thing is, they don't expand the mythos. They don't, like, nothing escalates. And it's like you say, it's just not different enough. I appreciate it's still going to be fundamentally about a predator hunting people, but that's what Prey is. But it does it differently enough that it feels unique from the original film.
Yeah.
Whereas this film, as I said, it's so similar structurally to Predator that you immediately compare it.
That was the right time for it, though. There was no way in the 90s they're going to have a female Native American lead in a film.
You know, but because they kind of said the problem is Prey is ultimately, and that is one of the things this film does famously in that final sequence, is basically set up the entire Predator expanded universe, because Prey basically comes about because of that fucking gun. Because he hands him the gun and it says 1879. It's like, oh, they've had loads of battles here. And of course, Aliens versus Predator, the whole empire that came with that, like with the video games, the comics, the obviously Alien versus Predator movies, that all started with Predator 2.
And it's the thing we've said so many times on this podcast. Things you remember or what becomes iconic seems to always come from the sequel, not the original.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you said about the things that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Amber from The Running Man. Why did they just decide that she was pregnant? Hadn't been mentioned. There was no hints that she was pregnant. There was nothing. And right in the middle. Oh, by the way, he didn't kill her because there was something inside her.
Well, I think they were just setting up the rules again. Like, it was just like, oh, he doesn't kill people if they're unarmed. It was almost kind of like doubling down on that idea that even though he's killing motherfuckers left, right, and center, he's an honorable killer. So even though she had a gun, he's like, well, she's got a baby. There's no need to kill her. Although I will ask one question while you bring her up. Is Leona, played by Maria Conchita from Running Man fame, shit? Because some of her line deliveries in this film are so fucking bad. But sometimes I think she's just been given bad lines. But I was watching this film, I'm like, oh, she's very good. Which sounds very
hard.
It's
the same as when we did The Running Man. And she's yelling at Arnold Schwarzenegger, you Ben Richards, the famous killer. And she's right by the hill.
Oh, yeah. She does shout a lot.
Side of your weight bench.
Am I the only one who, for some reason, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen this film, I was convinced Bill Paxton was the father of her child. Huh? And then I watched it, I was like, where the hell did I get that from?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense at all. We've just met.
Also, what film is Bill Paxton in? Because he's not in Predator 2. Like, whatever character, whatever film he thinks he's doing, he is not in this film. It is like his character from True Lies for a start.
Yeah.
Why again is he saying all of his...
Sounded quite annoying. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I was quite happy when he died, to be fair.
The thing is, he does that brilliant Bill Paxton thing.
I mean, also in this film, like, not real life. Yeah.
Well, Bill Paxton is almost like the ultimate on-screen slime ball, and he's greater in this. The one thing he can do, though, is like how quickly he turns, and he does it brilliantly in this. Like, he's such a slime ball, but then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, but he's also a bit of a badass. And it's like, I think that's like a Bill Paxton special. Like, he does it in Aliens, for instance. It's like, oh, he's the moany, whiny guy, but when it comes down to business, he can become the hero, and he dies that almost like honorable death. Very similar in both films. And there are nods towards Aliens in this film. Like the scene in the meat locker. It's basically just the scene from the APC in Aliens. It's like you just replace Baldwin with a pwn. Not a pwn. Who was the guy?
The commander. Gorman.
Gorman. No, is that right? Gorman. Yeah. Where he's like, as soon as things kick off, he just falls to pieces.
Freezes.
So yeah. Danny Glover takes on the Sigourney Weaver role. They're all like, they're being watched on a bunch of screens with their names underneath and everything. It all goes, they're all going confident, but basically they're not given proper weapons because they're all supposed to freeze the Predator. It's a complete ripoff of that scene from Aliens. But again, like everything else this film does, it's just not quite as good. Although, I'll admit, like, this film does have like a bunch of set pieces, and because I think the train sequence happens about an hour into the film, and from the train sequence onwards, this film's pretty much nonstop. Not all of it works, but it is pretty relentless then for the next 45 minutes, because you have the train sequence, then you have the the meat locker sequence, then I'd say meat locker part two with Danny Glover, then the rubbish fight scene with the Predator on the roof, then the ship showdown, which we mentioned is a bit clumsy, but it's super iconic. And then, like end of the film. But like you said, 45 minutes is pretty much nonstop. And before that, you obviously have like the opening shootout with the gangs. And to come back to your initial point, fuck knows what they're all shooting at or what they're so angry about. I mean, the gangs themselves actually seem a bit cartoonish, but supposedly they're based on real gangs from the 80s, which terrorized, of all places, New York City, makes sense, and Kansas. Okay, sure. This is just some of the facts I read.
You know, I want to ask a question. Sorry, it's not that one. There's another question. His car got destroyed at the beginning of the film, yeah? Totally destroyed. So where did his other car come from that also had a lot of weapons in the boot?
Motor pool.
Just everything's a gang war, so every car has an arsenal in it.
That's the last thing on my list. Why does Danny Glover have military-grade weapons in his car? I mean, it's not like tactical shotgun. You can imagine a copper having it. He's got a full... It's like an M4 rifle
with a grenade launcher.
He's got some kind of gun strapped to his leg. I mean, the stuff in there is highly illegal.
Even Arnold Schwarzenegger had to rob a convenience store to get his rocket launcher in Commando. Yeah. Whereas Danny Glover just fucking fully kitted out. And it's one of the worst kits. Again, it reminds you that he's maybe not the movie star we want him to be.
to be fair, convenience store that has military grade equipment, or just in the back of his car.
Sounds pretty ropey, yeah. Doesn't it?
It does. Although, as well, speaking of weapons in this film, like I do miss the giant handgun with outrageously massive sights, and it felt like everybody had one of those in this movie. And it just
everyone
felt like that
had
was like
lasers, and also you couldn't be in the in the special team without having a stupid gun.
That's why they all wear big clothes.
I love the idea. That's what they actually say. Welcome to the special team. Here's your laser sight giant handgun. It's like, yeah, fucking awesome, man. So cool.
You look at Amber from Running Man. She goes, where the fuck am I going to put this?
Where am I going to put
this? In your prison
Well,
pocket.
Speaking of, I mean, we mentioned Bill Paxton, and obviously we might mention Maria Conchita. I mean, the real star of this film, make no mistake, is Gary Busey. I mean, it's amazing that we've gone this far without mentioning him. He is maybe the best action movie character actor. I'm not sure if there are many action movie character actors, but if there is one, it's Gary fucking Busey. Like, he's never the lead. When I think, like, I think of this, I think of Under Siege, I think of Point Break, and in all of them, he's never the lead. And in every single one of them, he fucking slays. And we all seem to have universally forgotten, because he's gone insane, that in the 80s, Gary Busey was a fucking badass. To this day, like, Mr. Joshua is one of the great on-screen bad guys. He's fucking... that was the first thing I saw him in. I was just like, oh, well, Gary Busey just knows fucking kung fu.
I'm going to agree with you on most of that. I have to disagree. He was pointless in this film.
I kind of think they didn't enough.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I want more of him. But
as the guy who is meant to come in, we know what we're doing. As soon as he says, we know what we're doing, we're the special team, they're going to get killed. You know that. I just don't think there was enough. He gave Busey enough to do. So I think he was pointless.
Yeah.
Oh, I completely see what you mean.
It didn't matter. You wouldn't have cared if he died. Busey needs... And apparently, Busey was brought in to replace Schwarzenegger because Schwarzenegger didn't want to do it. So,
but
that's my immediate thought. If you can't get Schwarzenegger to do your film,
I see what you mean. Like, he's not in enough. But with the little he's given, he still gets some of the best lines. Like, again, like when he's spraying the Predator with like the fucking ice foam stuff, and it's like a nothing line. He's like, too late to go home now. And I'm just like, why does that line stick in my mind like 30 odd years later? When he's explaining to fucking Murtaugh, and he's like, he's not getting it. He's like, a fucking alien. I'm just like, yeah, you fucking tell him. And he's like, you know, when he's explaining what the Predator does, like, oh, he's on safari. Lions, tigers, bears. Oh my, like, I remember all these lines, Gary, like, basically every line he has in this film is ingrained in my head. But to your point, I wish he had more to do. And it comes back to that initial point about having a decent cast, but you not giving a fuck about enough of them. Like, they should have got Busey and Mike together much earlier in the film, working together.
They should have teamed up for the end of it. They should have been, and they should have teamed up, and then the rest of his team is taken out, so he's on a mission now to sort the Predator out. Or maybe he gets injured and he sends Mike on his way for the final showdown. Yeah. But there should have been more Busey. The one thing Busey did give us is the freeze frame. I think that's fantastic. Like, if you Google Predator 2, you will just find that Gary Busey freeze frame.
That's a great freeze frame. That's his face after the Predator shoots him with his shoulder-mounted rocket from point-blank range. And how does he survive? How the fuck does he survive?
Gary Busey.
Because he's getting, again, that makes no sense. So he gets shot at point blank range, somehow magically survives. Then when he does get killed, which make no mistake is the Frisbee is so cool. When he lines it up and it all lights up, he throws it and it's in slow motion. It goes through all the meat and then gets to Gary Busey. His legs fall down. You see loads of blood. You're like, fucking awesome. Wait a minute. Where's the fucking rest of him? What happened to the top of his body?
I don't think they had the money to show the top of his body. You just see his legs fall.
There is supposedly an answer to this, and it's the original cut of this movie was much more violent, and it was just at the start of the NC-17 rating, and that was like the new X-rated movie in America, and it was seen as like the death knell of a movie's box office. And the original cut, which doesn't exist anymore, was much more violent, and in that, what was supposed to happen, and it's based off, I think, a scene, and sorry if I'm stepping on facts here, but this film wasn't made because of the first film. It was made because of the success of the Predator comic book turned into this big, massive success, and that's why they made this film. And the sequence on the train is actually taken directly from the comic books. And this is another one where the Predator throws the blade, it goes through his body, but his body kind of travels on the blade. So it hits the wall, and then you see, like, he's held up by the fucking frisbee going through the wall, and his, like, entrails and his stomach and all that kind of drip down onto the floor, and it's supposed to be super gross. And I think that's the explanation. His body's over there, but we just never see it. So it just looks like a magic
fucking awful.
That, it, and it asks, it raises so many questions that we would have had on this podcast. Like, why was that blade able to go through everything, the Predator's arm?
It's
his body stuck to it. Like, is he just full of buttered sausage that are just stuck?
Him? It just takes him with it. Although that is another thing this movie does, which is pretty cool. Like the Predator's gadgets, like the frisbee's amazing, and that net thing is so badass. Not a fan. You put in your face.
This is the thing, right? He has a shoulder-mounted cannon that can obliterate anything. So why does it feel like someone said, "Well, we've done that in the first film. We're gonna have to do something else. Let's give him a little fork that pops out of his arm."
Yeah, but he's not just killing to kill; he's doing it for sport.
A cannon on his shoulder. So why has he got flying fork, a net,
the fork,
a spear? Why are they using stuff that's like
It is down to the fact that he's doing it for fun. He's the whole thing with predators, and there's a reason again when he goes to the wall and there's an alien and there's a human and all these things, is that they're testing themselves. It's not like, oh, I could just, because they could just blow them up from orbit, he could kill everyone very easily. But the whole point is, to a certain extent, he's testing himself, he's putting him into certain positions. So that's why he has all these guys. It's almost like just showing off. And like you said, this Predator is a show-off. Like, he has Danny Glover, like, dead to rights, like, twice. And instead, he just kind of strolls around like he's fucking John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever and just waits to get shot. But like you said, he's a fucking show-off. And I think that's pride. That's the biggest weakness of the Predator, pride.
He's not just a show-off. Is he a cheat as well? Because apparently he's in a game where you hunt each other. But he hasn't told the other people.
Anyone else?
Yeah, he hasn't told anyone they're hunted. And he's got all these things where he's invisible. If he's the world or the universe is one of the universe's greatest hunters, does he need camouflage?
Wow. You could say
but
that.
He doesn't against...
You hunt birds in a ghillie suit. And,
Oh, yeah. All right, you just quite
weird times.
He did it to me, sorry. Yeah.
Well, it's like the sequence with King Willy. And I'm not sure how I feel about King Willy and his magic bones. It's a strange fucking sequence.
King Willy reminds me...
That's a pointless scene, wasn't it?
He reminds me of the bad guys from Marked for Death, the Steven Seagal film where he goes up against the Jamaican drug lords. It's just fucking King Willy. Why was King Willy a big enough, I guess, fish to be put on the wall? Of all the skulls you have on the Predator skull wall, why was it King Willy?
It did feel ceremonial, didn't it? Like, it was a big deal. Like I said, the whole thing about the Predator being a show-off. Like, he doesn't just jump down and kill him. Like, he jumps down, and even though he's got his, like, camouflage suit, he's basically just freaking out King Willy because he's walking. He knows King Willy can see him. King Willy can see him. He's got the camouflage, but then he turns it off and kills him anyway, takes his head away. Like I said, he's a showman. That's his shtick. I actually think they should have kept more with, like, the voodoo gang members. That was, I thought, one of the cooler scenes. You know, it's got the great line, fucking voodoo magic man, but it's got the, this isn't about money, it's about power. And it has, like, the fucking needless 80s / very early 90s tits. Just tits. Like, why is there sex?
The porn star, it's just,
I don't know. Was she?
Yeah.
Okay, so I found out. I didn't know she was a porn star, but my God, she was having fun.
God, that reminds me. The first time I watched this film was with my mum, and that came out, and I was quite young, and I was like, oh no. Ooh. And she just looked at me and went, she's enjoying herself, isn't she?
She was really enjoying herself.
I get it. It's supposed to be, I'm not even sure if you'd call it a metaphor, but the whole idea is obviously this is supposed to be the concrete jungle, and they really do lay it on, like, she's making animal noises and all that jazz. It's all a little bit clumsy with the imagery, but what it really is, if you're watching it with your mum, a really fucking loud sex scene. That's what it boils down to, you know, and not what you need when you're fucking 8 years old. That's for damn sure.
Did you keep an eye on your mum's hands? Were they above waist height? Were you okay?
Oh dear. do we have anything else? I mentioned the super predator face, you know, the healing scene. Like, do we like the ending of this film? You know, how do we feel about, like, the showdown? I liked it when all the predators came out, like the fucking LA Lakers at the end. I actually thought they probably blew a lot of the budget on that because they all looked really cool. And I like,
no, they did. I thought you meant because they got the Lakers, but I think they did Danny Glover a favor.
Yeah.
But Jackson Number is what you mean. In fair, I don't. The end scene in the ship seemed to go quite quickly. There was the build-up with it where he's chasing him through the streets or the rooftops and stuff, and then all of a sudden he's in the ship and he's able to take him out pretty quickly. I didn't know whether or not it needed more. Again, for me, it would have been having two guys there or a bigger battle going towards the ship than the actual ship itself. But as a kid, I guess everyone was the same thing when you see that. When you see the Predator skull on the wall, you see those guys, they give the gun, they respect him as a better hunter. So I kind of like the ending. I think the ending is, and it leaves a lot open. So it's quite ambiguous. So I think it's good.
I think it's one of those weird scenes, like, and I know you're not like a Star Wars fan, but it's like people have been very blasé now about, like, say, when Yoda fights Count Dooku in Episode 2. And I know this doesn't mean much to you, but, you know, one of those scenes, like, in the moment, and obviously to compare this, it's one of those sequences now, because we know what's happened, they made those terrible Alien versus Predator films, like, the reality of what happened afterwards was never as awesome as we hoped when we watched this back in 1990. But to see the alien skull and all those, like, potential different species on the ship was such a big deal in 1990. Like, a massive deal. And another thing we take for granted now is, like, these crossover universes and all that jazz. It just wasn't a thing. Like it blew my fucking mind when I was like, wait, the aliens and the Predator, they fight? Like, it was fucking insane.
But then you had to wait, what was it? Was it like 20 years or whatever it was for Alien versus Predator?
A real disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, but I will actually say on record, we liked the sequel. Was it Alien versus Predator Requiem? Thought that was good.
Is that the one in the ice?
Oh, you fucking...
That's the first one, in the ice. The second one was the one in the town where... I thought it was
Fucking Rob.
Halfsack is one of the killer, one of the guys.
Oh, God damn it, Rob.
Yeah.
I thought the worst thing that was going to happen.
I'd rather watch that as fucking Doom.
All right, let's just talk real now, right? I thought the worst thing you were going to say on this podcast was that The Predators is a decent film. Make no mistake, The Predators was one of the biggest disappointments of all time. Like,
was that Black Fourth Best Predator?
Yeah. Was that with,
the Shane Black one.
Oh, yeah. It was good. I mean, the only thing was turning him into Guyver at the end, but...
The ending is one of the worst endings of any film of all time. Of all fucking time. It's an absolute...
I'm not even going to tell him. I was joking about Requiem. Now I'm just going to let him go.
You have to be, because you've thrown a couple of curveballs my way. Requiem is such a piece of shit, dude. It's such a piece of shit. It's so bad. Like, it's aggressive.
I'm just gonna let him go.
Oh my god! I just wanted to make sure. Sorry, I was having a bit of a coughing fit, and all I heard in the background was you talking about how, like, you liked Requiem. I was like, no, it can't be true. We might have to end the podcast. But anyway, jokes aside, though, that is the problem, isn't it? Is that it led to Aliens versus Predator, and it was just like those films. Again, we talk about, like, disappointments. When we were, if you told me, like, in 1990 when I was 8 years old watching, I probably would have watched it in, like, 92 when I was 10, that they would make an Aliens versus Predator film. Back then, I'd be like, well, that's going to be the greatest movie of all time. Because watching these films when I was a kid, like, the biggest deals in the world were, you know, Robocop, Die Hard, but two of the biggest films of my youth were Predator and Aliens in particular. And the idea of those two coming together, I was like, I couldn't imagine anything fucking cool. And obviously, the comics were dope. The fucking video games were amazing, the PC ones. And then somehow they gave them to fucking Paul Anderson. And fucking terrible.
I mean, I've always hated Paul Anderson. So I will go. I was joking. I can't stand Paul Anderson. I hate all his fucking...
didn't make Requiem. It was a special effects guys who made. I forgot their name, but it was, like, I think their brothers, their special effects dude who made the second film. And that one was even worse. Like, the Paul Anderson one's bad, but just it's just bad. Requiem is, like, outrageously bad.
When you had the idea of Alien versus Predator in 1990, when was this released? 92, 90, I think it's 99.
99.
99.
This is 1990.
I was just saying, it wasn't
the time. It went very Welsh then. Like, I'll say it properly if I say Welsh. 1990 it is.
19. When you saw that and you thought Alien versus Predator was coming, in your mind, well, in my mind, I'm assuming you're the same, Ripley's coming back, Ripley's coming down, you're going to have, like, Ripley and maybe Dutch or Danny Glover again going up, and the aliens are fucking, in your mind, that's fucking epic. And then you get what you got. You know, it's fucking...
And we won't go into the whole The Predator thing about how bad it is or how, you know, whatever you might think of it. But the reason the ending of the Norman, because there were some of that film's okay, but I was very much swayed by the ending, is that they did that whole what's in the box thing for half the film. And I started thinking, like everyone else, you're like, man, if fucking Arnie gets out of there or fucking Sigourney Weaver gets out of there, I'm going to lose my shit. And then that fucking armor came out and I audibly, and I don't do this in the cinema because I'm like a bit of a cinema Nazi. Like I tell people off for talking, no sound at all. Thank you very much. I audibly went, what the fuck? Like you can't be having that.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but no, this film's got a much better finale.
That box was human size. You know, so it was originally meant
exactly
somebody. It was meant, and then all of a sudden they decided, you know what, we can't get the person we wanted because they think they went down the Dutch route, and then they said, oh, maybe no, can we get Ripley? But maybe she's a bit old. Oh, what about Adrian Brody? Let's bring him back. He took out some predators, and so let's get him back. Oh no, we can't do that. Okay, let's just make it a Guyver suit. And you're like, oh, fucking hell. I mean, to be fair, that build-up, the rest of the film, I think, is great. I really enjoyed it. But
what would Adrian Brody have brought to the... They're going to save the universe because he can kill a couple of predators.
And he killed predators.
I like... Adrian Brody was fucking good in The Predators. In Predators. Adrian Brody was legit good, I thought.
He's boring to watch. Anyway, he's just a man.
Yes.
It was a shit ending. At least the suit gave them a proper...
Yeah.
Thing
well, to, the other well, problem, not only was the suit a terrible idea, but it looked shit. That was like the really unforgivable thing.
Whatever you say, and I know this is Predator 2, not the Predator, but whatever you say about the Predator, it did give us one of the best lines in the world ever.
Fuck me in the face with an aardvark.
Fuck me in the face with an aardvark. Yeah.
Of course, that classic line.
Love it.
Back to this Do we film, have anything else to say about actually Predator?
Yeah. Did Predator always have a vagina in his mouth?
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember seeing Flappy Labia inside.
Yeah, when he opens his mandible and...
Yeah, no, but it felt like he really leaned into it. Yeah, because he goes out of his way. He calls him Pussyface in the film.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was looking at it, I was like, fair play, that mouth really does look like a vagina. And I was like, I thought the exact same thing. I was like, I know he always had that kind of weird facing going on, but I was like, I don't think the inside of his mouth was that... Was he like, dare I say, in the previous film?
I'm guessing,
or has been since?
Not every Predator is the same.
Also, I don't think you got that good a view of it in the first film. He takes it off and he screams, but it was like close up into his mouth.
Because Dutch had trapped him on the floor and he's about to stab him and he said, what the fuck are you? And you see his face because he starts laughing.
I might have to go back and have a look at that.
I'm
going to have to check for pussy mouth in the original Predator now. This is ridiculous. There's one thing I'm going to mention before we move on. It's the most unforgivable oversight of this movie, without question, are the really boring credits. Like, the credits from the original Predator film should have been this series' greatest legacy. Why they didn't go back, have the whole cast, them all smiling, play a cheesy song, and in fairness, like, they used the Alan Silvestri score so many times, never to particularly good use in this film. And then the credits, they don't use it. They don't have the cast there again. I was just like, guys, that was a layup. It was a fucking layup. And
I think
missed.
It's because the cast, although individually I like them. I think Bill Paxton's great. Danny Glover's great. Gary Busey is great. They weren't as likable in this that they were in Predator. In Predator, even though they're the killers and things. And again, Predator 1's credits are fucking insane. Like, they do not belong to the rest of the film. But I don't know if I wanted to see a bunch of sweaty people in LA giving me a thumbs up again on the screen.
Yeah, and that comes back to the fundamental issue with this film is that despite having a pretty decent cast, they often feel like they're wasted. It's like you don't care when Bill
Did you know this
dies.
As well?
Don't care when Gary Busey dies, and you should care when they die. That's the whole... Like, in the first film, even when fucking Hawkins dies early in the film, you kind of care. And it's just like, I don't give a shit about any of these people.
Two things, right? Did you notice Lethal Weapon Captain again?
Yes.
Just randomly.
Any police thing that's going on in the 90s, he's there.
Yeah. And even though I've seen this film many times, I completely forgot that the deputy chief was Robert Davi or Davi or whoever he is. And I instantly thought, oh, he's evil. Yeah, this is Robert Davi. Yeah, you just think he's fucking evil, like he's one of the Colombian drug lords or something. I'm sorry, I may be stereotyping on that one, but
it's true.
Yeah, honestly, even though I've seen the film many times, I just thought
it's one of those interesting films. And maybe I'm kind of stepping on scores and recommendations here, where I hadn't seen it for a long time, but it was exactly what I remembered it being. It's exactly what I thought it was going to be. It was exactly what I remember it being, for better and for worse. It's just one of those fucking movies. Should we move on to favorite scene?
Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, cool. I'll go first. Mine's pretty easy. I mean, the meatlock sequence is pretty good, but when I think of this film to this day, I always think of the train sequence. And I know Dave rightly brought up the issue with the fact that Bill Paxton shoots the Predator like 72 times. It doesn't seem to bother him, but it still looks great. And it still feels unique. Like, you have action sequences on trains and stuff, but nothing quite feels like the set piece from Predator 2. And I think it starts with just a wild thing of just everybody on the train having guns and the Predator just going to town on everyone. Yeah, it's easily my favorite sequence of the film.
For me, it's El Scorpio. Just El Scorpio at the beginning. For some reason, that guy just...
ready! Yeah. He's such a lasting impression. He's awesome.
I love the fact he's got two Uzis and doesn't know how to shoot. I mean, I don't think any bullets to them went straight. They just all went in the air. But I mean, come back down.
That's the thing. They will come back down. But if you can't shoot for shit, like, it's probably best that you have two Uzis. If you're just going to spray and pray, they're the guns for it.
And a grenade launcher, but I just love it. I mean, I don't think I would have liked that scene as much if it wasn't El Scorpio. And I am totally like probably Mandela effecting this up, because he probably isn't called El Scorpio or whatever.
No, he is. He's El Scorpio.
He's played by a stunt guy who's actually done stunts for, like, he was married to Lindsay Wagner, old school actress. You looked at me blank then. Did you know as well? I say, did you know? I've always credited Mandela effect. I've always just credited that line as, "Hey, mister, want some candy?" I've always thought it was, "Hey, mister." He just went up to him and want some candy. And again, how is he fucking invisible when the kid with the fake Uzi saw him?
It's so dumb, because, again, you've got to remember, in the first film, as ludicrous as it was only people, let's be clear, people of colour could see him, you know, because they're the mystical types, because it's the 80s, yeah? It's all a little bit racist, but it was what it was. It was like, oh, the dude has, like, special fucking foreign powers, so they can almost sense the Predator and they can hear him. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's what they're doing in the original film. In this one, every cunt can see him. Everyone can see him. You know, even the crackers, we can all see the Predator now. It's absolutely ridiculous. But speaking of credits, did you notice in this film, and it goes to show the fact that most people in this film aren't used as successfully as they should have been, second credit in this film after Danny Glover is Kevin, is it Peter Hall? Is that his name? The guy who plays the Predator.
Yeah, Kevin Peter Hall.
He's your second billing in this film. I was like, that's probably right. That's probably fair. But I was amazed to see it all the same.
Day favorite scene,
probably the very end where the Predators give him the gun and the mutual respect thing. I quite like that. It was a nice little scene. It was quite short. It was to the point,
and it sets up so much of what you think could be great going forward. Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't get that. I mean, it's funny. Predator has one of the biggest but worst legacies. It's ridiculous, like the amount of just shit that's come from it. So.
Well, like I said earlier, it's weird. It's a lot of it is middling. But as much as I like that sequence, to come back to that, it does feel like it's followed immediately by a really clumsy nod to the original film. Like, why does he have so much ash on him? Like, he does the jump over the top, and when he walks out and he's covered in all that ash and he's great, he just looks a bit dopey. Like, they just don't do as well. Again, another one of those things where, oh, remember we did that thing in the first film? It's like that, but not as good. And that is the constant problem with this film. It happens like 72 times.
Do you have a question as well? The ship was underground, yeah?
Yeah.
So how long has the ship been under there, that they've built buildings on top of it?
They sort of come out of a subway tunnel, don't they?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did they reverse it back up a tunnel?
I think that's what happened. Like, they had, because they've got their like camouflage, and they've overshot it and gone, fucking Jeff, reverse it, mate. You've got 200 meters that way, Jeff. I don't know why the Predator's called Jeff. He's looking over his shoulder, and all the other Predators like, fucking Jeff, man. He always does this.
Yeah.
All this technology, and you always overshoot the fucking mark. Unbelievable.
My name is Jeff.
Sorry, just a really odd reference to, what was it, 21 Jump Street? 21. Hey, tell him that time, man. Tell him that really in-depth story. My name is Jeff. It's such a great sequence. That's my favorite scene in that film. Just put it that way.
Loves.
Oh, sorry, Loves.
We all did favorite scenes.
Number one, like, I'm going to give him a shoot. Danny Glover, he's no Arnie, but I think he's actually pretty good. He's got good screen presence in pretty good nick. Number two, when I was younger, we already mentioned this, the alien skull was the coolest thing ever. I mean, now it might be the worst, but back then it was the fucking business, so I don't want to forget that. And number three, like, despite the fact that they're kind of wasted, the really fun supporting cast, Busey, Paxton, right down to, I think his name was Henry Kingy as Al Scorpio. I had him down as one of the characters. Like, he leaves a mark. I always remember him doing the cocaine and just fucking losing his shit.
You say his name's awesome. Henry Kingy?
Henry Kingy. I'm not sure if that's pronounced K-I-N-G-I.
That's why Lindsay Wacker married him. Henry B. Kinky.
Ooh, Henry Kinky with a name like that. If ever there was a case for nominative determinism, Henry likes to fuck, no doubt. Anyway, sorry, your Loves.
Sorry. So for me, surprise, surprise, it was Al Scorpio. Like he made a big impact. That was a fan.
Well, that's the one thing we're all agreeing on. Al Scorpio fucking rules.
Secondly, the transition of the King Willy scene, where King Willy takes out his little cane sword, and then he starts, like, his mouth opens, he screams, and then the transition cuts to him just kind of walking away, and is his head. So there's no, you don't see the fight, you just see that transition. I thought that was cool as shit. I really liked that. And secondly, the build, like the predator, the whole hint of what could have been. For this, like the skull on the wall, the flintlock pistol, things like that. And I know they come back to it now with Prey, but I really like
that. Well, that is the thing. They've all paid off. Like the gun paid off, the skull's paid off, and you can argue about how successfully they paid off, but everything that this film set up, they kind of ran with all of it.
The skull as well, next to the Predator skull, the littler one that looked like an alien skull. That looked like the skull from the guy in Willow. They just gone back to like Willow Times as well. I'm just taking that in Willow Times.
Or now I'm just thinking of a Predator film where he's just running around killing midgets. It's like, goddamn, man. Seems unnecessary, dude.
That I would
anyway, quickly move on for the love of God.
To be honest, similar last week, I found it quite difficult to find loves and hates for this because I did really enjoy the film. Things stand out. Either way, in particular,
It feels like that's a perfect, I think, sum up of this film. It's like it's perfectly decent, but it's very hard to find something I truly hate or love. It's just like I said, the intro, it's okay,
I mean, I like the gun handover scene, we've already established that. I mean, Glover's line, "You're cutting my dick off and sticking it up my ass." I mean, that absolutely fits a lot.
This film does have a lot of cool lines,
does. I really enjoyed that. And I know you weren't massively keen on it, Liam, but I quite like the continuation of Predator 1's music. It kind of it let you instantly know where things were going. You know, you knew what was happening. So I quite like that.
Oh, just to be clear, Alan Silvestri's score is legitimately like a bit of an action masterpiece. The problem is with this is that it felt like they're like, well, we've got the score and we're going to like create the scenes around it. So it's like you get these like that score in particular is great at building tension. And then you're watching the scene and going, there's no tension. There's no tension. You just, the music is creating tension for a scene which doesn't fucking have any. So again, the score in itself is fantastic, but it's another one of those where it's constantly reminding me of the first one, just going, oh, Predator 2's okay. Kind of wish I was watching the first film, but hey-ho, hey-ho. Hates, number one, can a movie be too sweaty? Yes. The answer is yes. Even dripping at night. Fucking dripping. Unnecessary. Number two, Danny Glover given an uphill battle by the costume department from moment one. As I said, I like Danny Glover, but God, like Bill Paxton's suit with the sweat marks, it's just all very upsetting. And number three, the Predator is occasionally just dumb as fuck. Like, he's a bit of a show-off. He should have been killed a bunch of times. Like, the Predator in the first film is a badass. In this film, I'm like, he's a bit of a dope. So they're my hates.
I'm going to take sweaty off mine because we know that this film is too sweaty.
Fair enough. Maybe he just needed a Bic razor.
Yeah. Oh, that would have done it.
That dry shave really upsets me. Yeah. Oh,
so
I'm dry.
No. Bill Paxton, I feel, was useless in this film. Like, I'm going to put Bill Paxton and Gary Busey together. I feel like they could have had more, but I feel they were useless. The Predator rules. For me, was the second one. it seems his rules were changed. Like you said, he got shot loads of times, but he's fine. But his arm gets cut off. All of a sudden, he needs to spend 20 minutes healing himself. The rules for the Predator seem weird. And I got a really weird one. This film made me think of Judge Dredd.
That is weird. I wasn't expecting that. But and let's be clear. If there's one thing I hate, it's being reminded of Judge Dredd. So, yeah, that's a really good point.
Because what I knew when going into this film, you had the shock journalist. The people want to know. But I confused him with the journalist from Judge Dredd, who Judge Dredd gets framed for killing. So I just confused the guys, and all of a sudden then I'm thinking about Judge Dredd. So this film made me think of Judge Dredd, and it upset me.
Well, that's a great point. Like, if any film reminds you of Judge Dredd, it can't be that good, because my God, that film fucking stinks. Really stinks. Just watch, if you haven't seen it, by the way, just any excuse to bring it up. As bad as Judge Dredd is, Dredd is awesome. Dredd is the best.
I've seen Dredd.
Yeah.
Dredd is.
I'm gonna upset you now. I don't mind Judge Dredd.
No,
it's all right.
We will be covering her on this podcast. Yes. Probably won't be getting.
Well, we're gonna have to get Dave in for the Judge Dredd podcast now. We need that different opinion of someone like, you know what? It's okay. It's fucking okay.
Usually that's me.
I quite like it's Rob Schneider.
Oh, you motherfucker! Oh, I was like, in my head, I was like, if he says Rob Schneider, I'm gonna lose my fucking mind.
Damn. Hello, again, like Commando. I know we haven't done your hate yet. Like Commando, where the guy that goes up against Schwarzenegger is Vern. Chain Mail guy. What was his name?
No.
But anyway, the guy that goes in fucking Judge. Yeah, Vernon Wells. That was the actor. Yeah.
I that was always sound. I think on the original podcast, I mix him up with Jules Verne all the time.
But then the guy that is meant to be the exact replica of Judge Dredd, the stud, is Amon DeSante. Like, fucking hell, dude. Like, you couldn't get... Yeah, Judge Dredd.
There are a lot of problems with that.
I am so sorry I brought up Judge Dredd now.
Anyway.
Right, do you hate it?
The way they stopped the bomb by cutting his arm off, fucking stupid. I totally agree with you. The 90s clothing doesn't work. I mean, it's impractical for fighting him, for a start. I didn't get caught.
And the other thing as well is, like, one of the brilliant things about the original Predator is its timelessness. It's like, you watch it, it's like straight away Arnie's wearing that, like, cool red polo shirt. It could be from any era. The whole thing shot in the desert. It's like, it could be the 80s, 90s, 2000s. Who fucking knows? As soon as this movie starts, you're like, oh, it's the 90s. It might be the distant future in 1997, but it's still the fucking 90s, dude, for sure.
Yeah, and my final one is, it's not Bill Paxton, but Bill Paxton's character.
Yeah.
/ Gary Busey. There's, you know, if you're going to have Busey, let him be Busey.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah, fair enough. Fucking Rob Schneider, unbelievable. I'm
just upset in this one that Busey didn't turn around to Adam Baldwin and go, Baldwin, give me two.
Well, there is actually one scene I was thinking whether he took it from this film and took it into Point Break, because at one point, Danny Glover goes right up in his face and he does that aggressive clap thing as if to make his point. Like, he gets right up in his face and claps in his face. Gary Busey does the exact same thing in Point Break. And I just wonder if he stole it from me. But a very kind of weird take. But anyway, sorry, please move on. Alternative titles.
Alternative.
To Predator 2.
We haven't got many. We've only got three.
Oh, unsurprising. There was never going to be that many to a film called Predator 2, I suppose.
Brazil, Predator 2, The Hunt Continues.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Sounds like the video game version, but sure.
Hungary, Predator in Los Angeles.
That really does make it sound like he's on holiday.
Yeah.
Oh, the Predator in Los Angeles. Oh my goodness. I mean, what is he going to get up to?
Denmark are doubling down. Predator 2, The Predator.
What?
Just in case you didn't get with the first one. The Predator 2, just in case you think this is about someone else. This is definitely about the Predator, dude. Unbelievable. Facts for the film?
Dave, you usually bring something for you. Do you,
always be phoning
you. Oh,
brilliant. He's like that fucking guy at the airport who's got all his stuff in his suitcase. He's got a 2-liter bottle of water as you're trying to get through security. This fucking guy, unbelievable. Sorry, Dave, I'm really on your shit.
Sounds like my mother.
Got very upset about the whole thing.
It's the other prick at the airport who keeps walking, like, keeps forgetting to get all his electrics and all his fucking metal out of the bag, the scanning area.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when you're like queuing to get something to eat and you get through this long queue and there's someone in front of you and then they get there. And when they get there, they suddenly start getting their money out. Then they're making their decision. Those people should be shot in the fucking street. The world would be a better place without them. I'm not talking about Dave.
Okay, right. Okay, there we go.
Yeah. We're not. I don't want to kill Dave in the street. Just be clear.
Yeah, the predator at the very end who hands him the gun. I don't know whether he's in other things because this is about predators in general, not just this film. But they called him Greyback, and they said that on his arm, just near his gauntlet, he's got a badge that's got a Native Indian on it. And it was part of the United States 2nd Infantry Division. And they played significant roles in World War I, II, and in the Korean War. So it suggests that Greyback Predator might have fought in one of those wars or, you know, gone hunting while they were fighting.
Got himself involved.
I'd love it.
Well, I mean, they do say, like, the Predator's, like, drawn to, like, awesome. Hot weather and times of violence. So if, like, you know, when World War II was going on in the summer, you're like, yeah, of course the Predator's going to show up.
Yeah, but I said after Prey, I'd love to see the one in feudal Japan. I still think that idea is great. Yeah. But I'd love to see one where they do go to, like, in no man's land. The reason why it's no man's land is because the predator's up there just fucking taking people apart. I think that'd be great. Is that your only fact?
I was just going to IMDb otherwise.
Oh, there you go. So I liked it. Filming of the alley scene was very troublesome for the filmmakers due to the rough neighborhood. The alley was littered with garbage, most of which was used in the film, and plagued with large rats. Local residents, angered by the noise created by the film crew, would throw bottles and paper bags filled with feces from windows at the crew in the alley below.
God damn.
Worst of all, the film crew found a dead body hidden among the garbage. The most horrible places I've ever had to film in were the alleys in downtown Los Angeles, Shane Mahan commented. And Predator 2 was shot in a lot of these disgusting alleys. They were dirty and depressing and gross with people peeing on walls. We'd be rigging something and there would be rats there. I mean, you just leave it. We found a dead body.
That seems like enough.
Yeah, you wouldn't think they're actually on location.
I love it. You're trying to film a really intense voodoo magic man scene and somebody's just throwing bags of shit at you.
Of all the things, who has like a... You've really got to set that up. Either you have...
You know they're shitting in a bag.
Of shit on, like, what, just ready to go? Or you actually shit in a bag and then throw it at someone? Like, do you know how angry you have to be to go, like, to, right, it's not just a matter of being angry, because when someone is angry, you can, like, you know, suddenly do something dumb. You can punch them, even shoot them, say. But to remain angry enough to be like, I'm going to show that motherfucker, you go into the kitchen, you grab a bag, you go to the toilet, you wait until you're ready to take a shit. You take a shit in the bag, you wrap it up, and then you throw out the window? Like, I don't think I've been that angry at anything ever. Like, it's just, I mean, fair play. If somebody threw a bag of shit at me, I wouldn't even be angry at them. I'd ask myself, what have I done to deserve this? It's one of those times where, you know, self-reflection, that's what it's all about. Sorry, Rob, facts. I do apologize.
That's right. The Jamaican voodoo posse gang seen in the film were based on actual gangs that were terrorizing New York City and Kansas City in the mid to late 1980s. Like, there's two cities I put together.
Yeah, I said that earlier.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I was ignoring you. Yeah. The Jamaicans were not played by actors or stunt people, but real life bouncers, because as director Stephen Hopkins said, they had to be able to be physically intimidating and die fantastically horribly. I do apologize, dude. I missed it when you said that earlier.
That's quite no worries.
The spear weapon that was used in the film disappeared and was reported stolen after filming was completed. I just love it.
Cool thing.
Somebody who probably threw a bag of shit is probably holding that, that on their wall now. Just that spear.
Of all the things.
After having the lower portion of its left arm sliced off, the City Hunter Predator was played in wide shots by one-armed stuntman R. David Smith.
Oh, that's a great one, actually, because I remember watching the film. I was like, how the fuck did they do that so well? Because famously... Carl Weathers gets his arm torn off in the first film. And if you don't watch the more recent special editions where they tied it up, there's a bit when he turns around and you can clearly see his arm behind his back, just taped behind his back. So watching this film, I was like, God damn, they did a great trick. It's like, yeah, of course he did. It was a different dude who only had one arm. So it makes sense.
Respirators were required during the slaughterhouse sequence due to the debris and chemicals that had filled up inside the set. Filming of this sounds awful.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe they were just that sweaty as well. Horrendous.
You don't get bags of shit and dead bodies thrown at you. You're now getting poisoned in a slaughterhouse. Fuck you.
Sounds rough.
John McTiernan's fee after Die Hard was $2 million. That's why he declined to direct this movie, because the executives wanted to keep the budget the same as on the first film.
Fair enough. John McTiernan is a weird one because obviously he has this great record of fantastic action films until he stopped making fantastic action films. He's got some real fucking stinkers on his CV. So I'm not sure if him making this makes it better or worse or what. I don't know.
Ruben Blades, who plays Danny, was giving a live television interview to Good Morning America in the set of the movie. During the interview, director Stephen Hopkins was unaware of this and thought that Blades was holding a production. So we walked on camera and ordered Blades to work very loudly. The incident was so embarrassing that Blades and Hopkins did another interview a few days later to apologize. The show stopped doing live interviews ever since.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Any more?
Oh, mate, I got fucking loads.
Do you want to do one more?
Yeah. The Predator scene on the ship make a special appearance in the humorous behind-the-scenes Danny Glover's Predator dance party video.
Yeah, I've seen that. It's insane. It's fucking insane. They're all just having a dance.
I've not seen it. Oh, shut up.
I haven't seen it. You have to look at that.
Yeah, they all just dance. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's worth watching. For Hug to the Future, so this is where we ask a question, remake, sequel, Don't Touch or Let It Die. I think you already mentioned it. I'm actually for more sequels. Thanks not to this film, but to Prey. You know, we already, like, the obvious one is a Predator goes back to feudal Japan. Like, it's the whole, like, if they hadn't shat the bed with Assassin's Creed, the whole idea is that you have the whole, of human history. Basically, you can go anywhere and make these films. And Prey has done that because Prey was really good. And you're like, yeah, just have one where it's feudal Japan, one in World War One, one in the, I don't know, wherever the fuck you want to go. Like, it's just left the door open to almost anything. So, yeah, of course I want to see another sequel. But as much as I like the idea of the World War One movie, it's hard to see past the idea of Predator fighting samurai in feudal Japan. That's definitely the one I think everybody wants to see. Yeah. Well, it's the low-hanging fruit, isn't it? Everyone wants to see that. It's like, just fucking make it.
You're right. It has opened the door to all these different options. The thing I'm worried about is they're just going to keep making fucking films to the point where you just don't give a shit anymore. Mm. You know,
don't overdo it.
Don't just keep, don't Fast and Furious it
or Scream it or anything. What are we on now? Like fucking Scream 7 or something. No. It's just, don't look at good ones.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Prey kind of, and I know they've still done all these films, Prey kind of resets it now. Which is fine, but then that was good. All right, the next one is okay, and then they'll just keep going until it's straight to DVD shit.
And I think the important thing is as well, like, Prey wasn't just a good idea. As I said, I think the reason it worked is because they stripped it all back, but, you know, like, as I mentioned earlier, back to its component parts. It's a really simple film, on the surface at least. The most important element of that film is that it's just really well fucking made. That was one of the most, like, when that was, like, straight to, because I think it was Disney Plus over here rather than to the cinema. I remember that opening shot and immediately thinking, why the fuck isn't this in the cinema? Like, it's such a gorgeous film to look at. And it's no good then going, yeah, on paper, Future Japan Predator, that's a good idea. But you've got to get a good director again. You can't let go of the quality.
I actually agree with Liam on this. When I saw the opening shot, I stopped watching it on my iPad and put it on my big TV instead.
It's too gorgeous a film. Like, this film's, like, fine. Like, you know, the director, what's his name? Stephen Hopkins. Like, you know, he made Lost in Space in 1998, which is a weird film. Everyone's forgot, like, Joey from Friends, isn't it? Matt LeBlanc. It was a really big deal, like, the build-up to that. Everyone's like, fucking Lost in Space. Everyone, like, back in, like, the early 90s, Lost in Space was still kind of a thing because the reruns were still on TV. I think everybody back then, at least, still had a pretty strong concept of what it was. And I know it's come back now with Netflix and stuff. But the movie, like, the special effects, certainly at the time, I remember the trailer being like, this film looks fucking amazing. And then it came out and it wasn't amazing.
I'm sure as well we've got to be in some sort of alternate dimension. I've never known any time for Matt LeBlanc to get mentioned. Oh, the film starring Matt LeBlanc, not Gary Oldman. You know, Matt LeBlanc.
I'm talking about this from the perspective of 1997 going into 1998. Like, I was a massive fan of Friends back. Like, Friends was, like, the biggest show in the world, bar none.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the idea of Matt LeBlanc being in this action movie, like, nobody, they weren't selling it on Gary Oldman. And Gary Oldman's great, but they were selling it on Matt LeBlanc. Make no fucking mistake. But in the end, Matt LeBlanc's not the problem with that film. Gary Oldman's not the problem with the film. Dare I say it's Stephen Hopkins, because the film's just not very fucking good. And it's the same, like, he made Nightmare on Elm Street 5 in 1989, not great. Life and Death of Peter Sellers in 2004, it's okay. And it all comes back to this film. It's decent, but it feels workmanlike.
It's funny, you said Nightmare on Elm Street isn't great. That's the reason he was given this job, because of that film.
Yeah, it's bizarre, right? So,
and somebody saw something. I mean, maybe the wrong thing, but they saw something. For me, in regards to the Hug to the Future, It's really weird, and I think we said this before, with when we do Back to the Future on sequels or on film franchises, because you want to say leave alone, and they've already done seven more or whatever it is.
But
if we're looking at Predator 2 alone, I don't want to see Predator 2 get remade at all.
No, of course not.
If I'm looking just standalone on Predator 2, just leave it as it is. But Predator overall, I do want to see some good more ones.
Some good more.
Yeah, like
Rob wants to see good more movie.
I want to see good more movie. That's all I want to see.
I'd love, listen, that's all I want to see is good more movie. That should be the tagline. Two guys and occasionally Dave who just want to see good more movie. That's all we want. That's a t-shirt right there.
T-shirts. That has to be a t-shirt. Hey, you guys, we watch good more movies.
Yeah, 100%.
Dave, 100%.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. There's no point.
Yeah, there we go. Make a change. So this is where we ask the question, if you could only make one change to this film, it's really easy. For all my complaints, and like I said, I love things about this film. Maybe not love. As Dave said, there's a lot of stuff which is okay in this film. But if there's one thing I truly hate, it's the wardrobes. So without question, if I could change one thing in this film, it would be the wardrobes and make them less horrendously 90 and tweed-like.
For me, I've already said what it would be. It would be more Gary Busey teaming up with Danny Glover. I think
that's a better answer.
That is you've got a better ending and a better, I guess, third part of this film as you move forward.
That fundamentally changes the structure of the film and deals with a lot of the problems that we have with this film. Is that if they get those two together earlier, you have more screen time for Busey, you have more screen time for Paxton, maybe make him less of a douche. Sure, if you have more of that screen time, you care more when he becomes less douchey and you realize, oh, well, he has this like persona, but he's actually a pretty good cop and stuff. They hint at that, but there's not enough of it. So mostly when you think back to Bill Paxton's character, you just remember him being douchey instead.
Yeah.
And with Gary Busey, you're like, well, he's kind of badass, but he's not allowed to be badass long enough. He just kind of shows up and gets killed. And it was just, yeah. For me, complaining about the clothes is one thing. The correct answer is get those guys on screen more and for longer, basically.
With Paxton, it was that Lone Ranger comment. He's the Lone Ranger? Yeah, he's the Lone Ranger. You go, Lone Ranger. What the fuck does that mean? Like, there was no hints to why he was the Lone Ranger. But,
Well, my initial thought was to have the ending credits as Danny Glover dancing with the Predators.
That's great.
That would have made my day.
Like an old school. They used to do it with Jackie Chan movies. They would end it with like a blooper reel at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I always loved those. I always thought those, especially for stunt movies, show me the blooper reel. If there's not a blooper reel, well, show me Danny Glover dancing with fucking Predators. That'd be awesome.
Sorry, was that a connection then, or was that you? Did you say blooper reel?
Yeah, I think it did cut out blooper reels.
Okay.
The blooper reel.
I was trying to get past the Good More Movie.
Good More Movie. Well,
like a stuck record, fucking bomb on his arm, rather than cutting it and it just stopped working, why not cut his arm off before he finished doing it and then legitimately didn't need to go off?
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's more of a classic Rob Star technicality, which usually get caught up. So thanks for bringing that up, Dave.
I did throw a technicality, that picnic table.
Oh, there was the picnic table. Sorry, I forgot about the picnic table. My mistake. In terms of video games, there was a Predator 2 video game for the Mega Drive, Master System, and Game Gear. It was by Acclaim, and it was bang average on all of them. It was mostly about shooting gangsters than anything else. And you'd have like the three little dots like chasing you around, but you're just like the Mega Drive version was. They looked okay. It was like an isometric view, and then the Game Gear and the Master System, it was like side on. But basically, it was just shooting no face gangsters while a little dot kind of chased you around, and it was just okay. The closest thing actually to Predator 2 was Concrete Jungle on the OG Xbox and PlayStation 2. It was basically Predator 2, but played from the perspective of the Predator. Sadly, while that sounds like an awesome idea, the game was also bang average. If I was going to make a Predator 2 game today, and this is a bit of a deep cut, is Crackdown 3 wasn't given the respect it deserved. It was made by Sumo Digital. I'm not sure if you ever played the original Crackdown on the 360. It was like a big deal back in the day because it had like a demo disc for Halo 2. It was one of the first like really popular open world games. And essentially it was set in the future and you're a cop, but you get increasing, like basically superpowers. So you can jump around the city and it's cool. Like you collect orbs, you shoot bad guys, all that jazz. And Crackdown 3, it got a lot of criticism because everyone's expecting it to be this big thing where they demoed it and had destructible environments. That never happened. What it eventually turned into was more Crackdown 1, and it's the most 7 out of 10 game ever. but it's still really fun just jumping around the city, collecting things. And unlike the movies, which are, you know, we're always talking about going backwards, in this game, it goes to a future version of the city where you have all these super cops jumping around. The only difference is you're playing as a predator. So you still get like the classic Crackdown gameplay of like collecting orbs as you like run around the city and climb up about things. The only thing is you're killing the cops instead of being one. So that'd be mine. But I can see the confused look on your faces because you haven't played Crackdown. So yeah, this will make sense to people who played Crackdown. It'll make perfect fucking sense.
For me, like you said, I mean, the Predator is the video game character, isn't it? If you're going to be, if you want a Predator video game, you want to be the Predator going around just taking, I guess, out innocent people. Well, not so innocent. They need to be armed. But for me, it would be Crysis. Do you remember Crysis?
Yeah,
where you could actually have the camouflage suit. And because
he's
the thing about the Predator is the Predator
he's got Predator powers.
Yeah, and the Predator's got all these great weapons. He's got this fucking, I don't know, erection spear and, you know, and all this other shit. So
That's the official name for sure.
The erection spear. He just tickled the end and it just got bigger. So it would be Predator. It would be Crysis for me if I was going to do it. Only because I've never heard of that crap one you were on about.
Crackdown is loads of fun. Especially, like you said, especially back there, it was like a really big deal for a couple of years.
Anything with
but yeah, Crysis is a great show.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions or are you skipping the video?
Dave's out.
He's bailing. So this is, well, you've got to answer now because this is the scores and recommendations. I'll go first because it's really easy for me. This is the most 3-star fucking movie of all time. You can make an argument that if we were using Rob scale, that this would be 2.5 because it's so middle of the road. As we said, okay, it's fine. I don't hate much. I don't love much. It's just okay. And like I said, when I say it's the fourth best Predator film, it's not because it's terrible. It's because I think Predators is slightly better made. And I think Prey's definitely better made. This is still fine. But that is all it is. It's fine. Danny Glover is fine. The visuals are fine. The Predator is fine. Everything's fine. And the best things aren't given a screen time. Busey is great. He isn't given enough to do, so he's just fine. So, yeah, 3 stars as fuck from me. And would I recommend it? Yeah, if you've seen the first film, there's enough to recommend. Yeah, I'd still watch it because it's kind of fun. And it's on, if you haven't seen it for some reason, you listen to this podcast, it's on Disney Plus.
For me, welcome to the Rob scale. It's a 3.5. There's a lot more that can be done with it, but I don't think it's... I think it's a bit better than middle of the road, even though it probably sounds like I'm shit on it quite a bit. But so for me, it's 3.5. But the weird thing is, I'm not too sure if this is a film that can be recommended or I would recommend it. It goes back to that age-old thing we've said many times before. The people I would recommend it to have already seen it. So
yeah,
for me, probably not. I wouldn't just go to some random, using our name, Jeff on the street and say, what's this film?
If I was talking to my name is Jeff, then you are right. Like, I wouldn't recommend this to just anyone. And that is really what the question is. Like sometimes I lose sight of that. I'm like, well, if you've watched the first one, I'll tell you to watch this. The real question we're asking there is like, if you have nothing to do with Predator necessarily, and you're just like, oh, should I watch this film? And it, like, the problem isn't the fact that it's a sequel. It's just like, it's okay. I wouldn't recommend it either.
Yeah. Dave, scores, recommendations?
It's a 3. Yeah, it's enjoyable to watch, but it's, you know, like you say, doesn't feel like a lot happens when it's finished.
You know, it just kind of happens.
I also agree it's the fourth best Predator behind the Predator and Prey, you know.
Wait, so you would have... So what would you write? So my order is Predator, Prey, Predators, Predator 2, The Predator. And we won't count Aliens versus Predator and all that jazz.
No,
The
Predator
is...
Yeah, you would put the Predator third. And then you'd have Predator 2 and then Predators on the end because I don't know, I can't deal with skinnier fake Dutch Adrian Brody or whatever.
I can't like him. Just keep like recreating what happened in the first one. Oh, I heard that if you can get covered in mud, he won't be able to see you.
Yeah,
and that's bad.
Come on.
The other thing as well, like you got the one ethnic lady. Oh, we hear the stories in my village. So
exactly.
Like, comes out not like for me.
The only character I liked in that film was the Russian.
Yeah. I love Wally Goggs in that film.
He's pretty good.
That is another thing, isn't it? It's just one of those like tropes from all the Predator films. Like, if you're ethnic, then you've heard about this in a village somewhere. It's like, yeah. Of course you fucking have. Ridiculous.
Just thought about Wally Goggs when he showed his tattoo and he goes, look at those tits. That's my sister. Oh, my dude.
Yeah. You say something about he's going to rape the woman?
Some raping. When he goes home, he's going to do some murdering and raping some fine bitches. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's the worst. And his name sounds like a racist epitaph. Like, was it Wally Gog or something like that?
Walton Goggins. I just call him Wally Goggs.
Wally Goggs, you got to be careful because that sounds racist as fuck, dude.
Walton Goggins.
But he's done some awesome characters in all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He's a great actor.
Oh, he's great, but he's horrendous now. But he is horribly unlikable. Yeah. So I'll give him that. But anyway, moving on. That was Preds 2. What are we doing next week? It's your choice, sir.
It is my choice. We're going to stay in the 90s. Well, literally, we're skirting the end of the 90s. Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz.
Oh, The Mummy. Unbelievable. As soon as you said that, I was like, how the fuck have we not done The Mummy. Again, another one of those movies that was a massive deal in 1999. 1999 was one of those weird films where you had like a lot of iconic films, like Episode One, The Matrix, The Mummy. It was almost like even though the early 90s had like these breakout special effects years with like Jurassic Park and Terminator 2, where it was still mostly physical effects, but they started like embedding them. It felt like there was like a long wait then for them to get it right again. There's a lot of dodgy CG in the mid-90s, but then suddenly in like 1999, it was like, wow, look at all these fucking films. And it was maybe the first ones after the early 90s, which have actually stood the test of time. We'll see if The Mummy has stood the test of time, but last time I saw it, it still looked pretty fucking dope.
I could tell you why we've put it off so long. Because I've been dreading us fucking mentioning the fucking legacy and you blowing Tom Cruise for the other Mummy film. So I've been...
No. I will not be doing that. Although I did watch Risky Business, which I would actually encourage you to watch. I know...
I've seen it.
Are you a fan?
Well, Risky Business. No, I didn't like it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. I thought it was so much better, so much more interesting than I was expecting. I thought it was a fantastic film. Anyway, that's besides the point. There are not many genuinely bad Tom Cruise films. I watched 35 minutes of that, and that was all I could get through. It's bad. He's bad in it. It's a bad film. It's maybe without question, I think the worst Tom Cruise film I've ever seen, and not a great, but it's the worst of Tom Cruise. It's just him on autopilot, doesn't work. So yeah, I'm not going to be talking much about that, sadly. I'll be interested to actually hear what you make of the direct sequels, because 2, maybe 3, I'm not sure about that one. But anyway, we'll get to it next week. Great choice. So please do join us next week for 1999's The Mummy. Do you have anything else to add before we wrap this shit up?
No, I'm good. Dave, anything?
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
Cool. I've been Liam. He has been Rob. He's been Dave. And you have been listening to the Hey You Guys podcast. Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Oh, and before I forget, where can folk reach us if they were so inclined to?
Well, you can actually reach us on Hey You Guys 80s at Facebook, Instagram, and on Twitter. But if you want to send us a mail, do heyyouguys80s@gmail.com. Send us in your recommendations. Send us in your thoughts about any of the episodes. Just literally talk to us. We'll have a one-sided talk with you on the podcast.
Yeah. We're nice folk. You know, get in touch. But no, cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye now. Hey, you guys!